Tell me about your schooling.
Well, I went to Chigwell School, which is a public school. I went there under the government support scheme, so my parents didn't have to pay fees. And in fact, Peter, my younger brother, also went there. He got a Harsnett scholarship. Chigwell School was an extraordinary school to go to, and a very large number of people in my class ended up in Oxbridge, and virtually everybody ended up somewhere at university. But from my my school associates, that there were five or six that came up to Oxford, and perhaps a similar number to Cambridge. I enjoyed school generally. I ended up as head boy, and interestingly, being head boy of a public school, I think it was you had more power than I've ever had before or since in terms of absolute authority. It taught me some things about authority, and I made some mistakes early on as head boy in that regard, being rather over draconian, and as time went on, realised actually what you needed to do in terms of leadership was not to be draconian, but to actually use power in a careful way. And interestingly, I think that resonated much through my life. I ended up in positions where I did have authority, but I recognised actually the ways in which one might use that. And again, when we deal with Ockham later on, I think a lot of what I learnt as head boy at Chigwell and the lessons that I learnt there were important. But in retrospect, I certainly made some mistakes in terms of the way that authority could be wielded. Of course, things have changed a lot now at Chigwell, and I'm sure that the head boy, or indeed girl now, would not have the sort of authority that we had then. But in those days, basically the prefects ran the school and the teachers taught, but we had jurisdiction up to and including corporal punishment. I came from Chigwell to Corpus Christi College, and it was a delightful college to come to. It was quite small. There were only 48 people who came to the college at the time that I came, and only three of us were medics. So there was myself, someone by the name of Donald Moyer, who later became a consultant at Milton Keynes and was an outstandingly good clinical haematologist, well liked and known. And my other associate, Philip Holm, who in fact is well known in the diabetes sphere and is professor of diabetes in Newcastle. And those were my only two associates. Of course, the great thing about the Oxford education was that clearly you couldn't hang around with just two people all the time, and so you had to talk and mix in with other people, and that was part of the education of Oxford. And it was indeed imposed at mealtimes that you weren't allowed to talk about your own subject, so you could get sconced, which is a silly habit of being forced to drink too much beer, and since I was teetotal anyway, I did try and avoid such things. But sconcing was still in place when I was up at Corpus between 66 and 69. And I'd recently actually talked to the steward who said, oh, sconcing had stopped in the mid-50s. But it hadn't. It was still around. And I remember sconcing at the time as I was an undergraduate in those years. Corpus was a wonderful place to be. We had individual tutorials so that there was no place to hide in terms of medicine. And I became the junior common room president, which I much enjoyed. And there were various dramatic presentations. I remember being in a performance of The Bees, which was written by one of the Dons, which was a take-off of a Greek tragedy written in terms of Corpus Christi College's one of the centenaries, and this is just a brilliant play, a stroke musical that we're in. It was part produced by someone called Mark Davis, who I rather liked, and Mark I bumped into. He was a year or maybe even 2 years ahead of me, I just think probably a year ahead of me actually, reading greats. He was someone who seemed to be able to write Greek poetry in his sleep and was feared almost by people at Corpus as being such an outstandingly good academic that you had to be very careful with Mark. He, it transpired, had started to learn classical Greek when he was about 5 or 6, because some old ladies who'd been looking after him in nursery school realised that they'd run out of things to tell him, so they thought, well, why don't we teach him Greek? The reason that I know about Mark is that I liked him a lot, and when his sister came up to Somerville, I thought that I'd better go around and see her, and I fell in love with her, and she became my wife and is still my wife, and so Mark is my brother-in-law. Well, those were the Corpus days, and they ended up successfully. I got a good 2-1 degree, to the extent that I could then go on and do a DPhil with Roy Kay, who'd been one of my tutors, whose tutorials I'd thoroughly enjoyed. He was based at Keble. And he hadn't had previous DPhil students for the simple reason that all the people he taught were physiologists, but he wasn't a physiologist, he was a physicist. And when I came to work with him, I suddenly realised that actually what you needed to do good physiology research were other disciplines, including both physics and mathematics. I had a great time with Roy Kay. He was quite excitable, I think is a fair term to describe him, so that occasions you would need to sort of duck. But he was a really wonderful scientist, and we did some very interesting work there relating to what amounts to the technicalities of human hearing. Technically it was called auditory psychophysics, but essentially what it was looking at the way in which the human brain deciphers speech. And it deciphers speech not on the basis of any very straightforward system of tonal hearing, in other words, what you think that the hearing would be, which is to hear a piano play going up a scale. It's very little to do with that, because if you think about it, it doesn't matter whether someone's voice is low or high, you're still deciphering it. How are you doing that? And the answer is you're looking at what amounts to frequency modulation, which is the way that the frequency within your voice changes up and down. Essentially, it's the in your voice, as opposed to the, which is amplitude modulation, that is getting louder and softer. It turns out that your brain has got quite specific channels. It divides all the sound up into channels which are selective for these frequencies. And interestingly, in mathematical terms, it turns out that the way to sort this out is to use things called Fourier transforms. And Fourier was a mathematician who discovered how to analyze complex sounds. And again, that reflected forward in things that I did later in life, of understanding how you might use physics and indeed mathematical techniques in order to get answers to complex biological problems.